for me, you know, sort of any time, even if I do experience a success, you know, when I set a new objective, I'm always kind of like coming back to the building blocks. And I think that that's important to keep in mind, especially when we experience failure, which we all do. And I think it actually is probably the biggest learning experience for all of us, because it's a big part of the human experience and it makes us humble.
Welcome to the Trailhead of Trail Runner Nation, where we go on interesting runs with crazy interesting people and talk about who knows what. Today's guest, who is it, Scott?
Hillary Girardi, and she is a fun guest. We're going to talk to her about courage. She calls it the little C's and the big C's and how they interrelate. So stay tuned right after this.
Hey, Scott, what if there was a drink that had 75 essential nutrients and vitamins? One scoop, it tastes great. Would you be interested?
I would, because it would be easy for me to get all of those great vitamins, minerals in one place.
Well, that's what Athletic Greens has done, AG1. They have sourced all the best products, placed them together, and provided bioavailable nutrients to allow us to perform at our best.
A lot of us aren't nutritionists, and we may have some gaps in our diet, and AG1 fills those gaps.
And not only that, Scott, it tastes great.
It's easy. You put it on your routine, you put a scoop of it in a bottle, shake it up, you're good to go. AG1 from Athletic Greens, and they have a special deal for Trail Runner Nation members. All you need to do is go to athleticgreens.com/TRN. And what they're going to do is they're going to give you a free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs by enrolling in their program. Hey, we want to thank one of our longtime sponsors, Path Projects. We want to tell you about two things. Number one, this Kill'em PX pant that they have. Holy cow, Freeman. I don't think I've gone a day without wearing these things. They are awesome. I wear them around the house.
Scott, I've gone out on the trail in the Kill'em PX, and they work just as good as they look when they're on around town. They're very functional, they stretch right, and I just love them on the trail and out in town.
Here's the second thing that you need to know about Path Projects. This weekend that you're listening to this podcast, they have a sale going. And Path Projects doesn't do sales. So you got to listen up and take advantage of this. Black Friday and Cyber Monday is going on right now. And here's what they're offering. All orders over $50, they get free U.S. shipping. And then you get a gift card for different levels of purchase. So $10 gift card for orders of $100 or more, all the way up to a $30 gift card for orders over $200. Go to pathprojects.com, take advantage of the Cyber Monday and Black Friday special, and get yourself a pair of these pants.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Don Freeman.
And I am Scott Warr, and we're here again with Hillary Girardi. We came across a topic that you were giving a speech on, and we thought, oh my gosh, this is a topic that all of us need to listen to. The topic is courage. But before we get there, we want to tell you a little bit about Hillary. If you didn't listen to those first two episodes, she is a transplant American that lives in Chamonix, France, and is a mountaineer. She loves the mountains, and that's the reason why she moved there. And she found out that she loved running and mountain running, and has become a phenom in the sky running circuit over there, which is, tell us a little bit about sky running for people that don't know what sky running is, Hillary.
Sure. Well, first of all, I'd like to just say, Don, Scott, it's really great to be back on the show with you. Always a pleasure. And this time, the previous time that I was on, we talked about the UTMB and we were talking about COVID lockdowns around the world. So this is, I'm excited to get to talk about a different topic. So sky running in general is a sport. We don't have a ton of it in the U.S. There are a couple races that are sky races, but the way I usually describe it is like if you a trail race where you have to like use your hands sometimes to scramble. a lot of vertical, steep terrain, technical terrain, basically everything that I love.
How many miles, when we talk about this, we think trail running, we have short runs, we have long runs. What's a sky run look like?
So sky running can really be like a pretty wide variety of different distances. And there is an international federation of sky running that has pretty precise rules about what qualifies as a sky race. For races I've competed in, they can be anywhere from, 20K to upwards of, 60 or more. There actually just was a European championship that had sky sort of classic and sky ultra distances. So it can be a bit varied. We don't tend to see, like sort of 100 miler races or anything like that. I don't know if they'll ever exist, but after a certain distance, you lack a little bit of the lucidity, I think, necessary to do some of those really technical stuff fast. But the sort of classic format is you leave the center of the town or the village, you go up the mountain, and you come back to the same place.
I have to say, first off, I've run races where I've had to use my hands, and that's because I've doubled over. But you're saying that you have to use your hands because these peaks are so steep that you're scrambling on all fours.
That's right. Usually it's because the mountain is pretty steep. And then sometimes it's just that there are kind of obstacles that you're scrambling over, boulders and stuff like that. I think that probably the best preparation that I could have ever had to be doing sky races in Europe was to grow up running in the mountains in the northeastern U.S. White Mountains, Green Mountains, Adirondacks, they are gnarly. They don't really do switchbacks. And honestly, it's pretty much sky running style for any of your listeners who are from the Northeast.
So one of the fascinating things about you as we were doing some reading is that you weren't always into running, always racing. It came a little bit later and you discovered it and discovered that, wow, I'm very good at this. Tell us a little bit about how you moved in from being a regular civilian to being a mountain runner.
Yeah, so I was always somebody, I grew up in the outdoors in rural Vermont. I always loved being outside. And then I went on to work in the Appalachian Mountain Club huts in the White Mountains. And even though I like really did not think I liked running ever, I got pretty into it that point, like looking at maps and being like, oh, I wonder if I could go from here to there. Or like there were sort of classic traverses, like the Hut Traverse it's called, which is, I think around 50 miles and 30,000 feet of elevation gain. And I did that when I was working there, not ever running, but, hiking fast. And that was sort of, I got passionate about that. I also am a skier and a climber and really into the mountains. And it was I did my first ever trail race was in the U.S., though my career has really been in Europe in the Adirondack, at the Great Adirondack Trail Race. And it's a really fabulous run through the High Peaks region in the Adirondacks. And I did that. And I think in 2010, I liked it a lot. It went super well, but I kind of was like, oh, well, check that off, did trail running. and then after a little bit of time here, I started running a little bit in 2012. I actually though had a ski accident that was sort of a gear malfunction that led to a pretty serious ski accident that I made it out of kind of miraculously. And I was looking for a different way to like be in the mountains, and sort of move through the mountains. And that was when my husband said, hey, you did trail running that, that one time, and maybe you should try it again. And again, like if you told me that I would have had to run on a road or I would have had to do intervals or I would have had to do any of that kind of stuff, I never would have done it. But we lived in Grenoble, France at the foot of this place called the Bastide. And I could go about 100 yards before hitting trails. And I went with friends, started going there. And boy, it wasn't easy at first. I can definitely say that it felt really hard. But there's great community there. There are great races. And sort of one of my favorite stories to tell people is that I did end up doing a trail race, the first one I did there, and I won a leg of prosciutto. And that really just sold me on it. I thought it was so cool that I could bring food home. And my husband was very much in favor as well.
A little difference between the European races and where we just give away a stupid belt buckle. And in Europe, where you get something that is usable.
A little more calorically dense.
One of the things, too, that we want to highlight is your work over there. You work for the Research Center for Alpine Ecosystems. Can you give us a little bit of a taste of what you do there, and then we'll get into the main topic?
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for bringing it up. I don't get a ton of opportunities to talk about it, but so I work. It's a small nonprofit research center. It's called CREA Mont Blanc. I swear the acronym works in French, even though it doesn't quite work in English. But as I said, it's a small nonprofit research center that really looks at the impact of climate change on mountain biodiversity, so plants and animals, and then sort of shares that knowledge and our methods through citizen science and different sort of educational campaigns with the greater public, decision makers, business people, et cetera, to sort of give them information that could allow them to make informed decisions.
Excellent. Now let's get into the main topic. As I can imagine, I've seen photos of the mountains over there where you live. And as a new trail runner, if you're looking up at these massive summits, you have to be a little intimidated, I would assume. What does it take to finally take that first step out and into those massive mountain ranges?
I mean, you're totally right that the mountains can be super intimidating. I would also say that even without going into the mountains, like a sport like trail racing can be pretty intimidating, especially in a place like Europe, where I'm sure, you know, people love to talk about the difference between trail racing in the US and in Europe. And in Europe, everybody's like seriously kitted out. And if it's your first time, it's like, whoa, I don't feel like I belong here. But one of the things that I like to think about when thinking about kind of mustering up that courage necessary to be able to sort of face down the mountains or a trail race or whatever is my first encounter with the word for courage in French, which is really the same word. It's courage. And I was describing before this run up the Bastille, and it was like about a 600 foot climb that you do to go up on these big zigzagging trails. And it was really, really hard at first. But I remember as I went up, there would be these, you know, people, these walkers who would see us running, and they would always say to us, you know, bon courage, like, which you can absolutely translate as good luck. But for me, there was really this difference. I remember thinking like, bon courage, like, I like that a lot more than, you know, good luck. And I think that's because I feel like luck is something that just, you know, like, well, it's the luck of the draw, you know, it comes from something external, whereas courage and bon courage, right, good courage comes from inside. And so it's something that I've given a bit of thought to. And I feel like the idea that I really wanted to share with you guys is that, you know, courage is something that we build over time. And it's not something that, you know, you just wake up one day and run a 25K or a 50K or do anything like massively courageous. It's through building up small acts of courage. And I know that you guys latched on to, so I'll share this idea that I like of small C courage and big C courage. And small C courage are those small actions that you do. And that can be, you know, going for a run, even when it's cold out and you're tired or you don't really want to, kind of uncomfortable, right? Those are small C courages that allow you to build to a big C courage. I think probably that idea for me was informed a little bit by, I think, Brendan Leonard, has he been on the podcast?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I was thinking he's a friend of Trail Runner Nation, but in his book, he has sort of this image of all these small building blocks that really, you know, small steps that build an edifice. And that's definitely how I think about, you know, facing down mountains. You don't go out the first day and say, oh, I'm going to go to the top of it. You say like, okay, I'm going to start a little bit, small acts of courage to get me to the big one, which will get to the top.
I love that concept. I think we absolutely have a good discussion there about how we can bring small acts of courage in so that we can build towards a big race or a big event and build our own personal courage. So I want to talk about that. But in your 6-minute audio clip that we had a chance to hear about Big C and Little C, you talked about courage and the different definitions that happen within a language. And then I started thinking about, how about just our personal definition of courage? We're walking around and we say the word courage. And to me, it means something. And to Scott, it might mean something else. And to you, it might mean something completely different. That we're all walking around just using language, but maybe we have different individual definitions. And maybe that's where a lot of the separation happens with all of us, is that we don't share definitions. We share words, but maybe not definitions. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's a really great insight, Don. And that's really what got me thinking about it as well initially, because I was asked to give a talk on a panel. And, you know, there were these guys from the military on this panel, and there was the president of Armenia on the panel. And I was just thinking like, boy, I'm not courageous. Like, look at these guys, you know, no way. And it was really because we didn't have the same definition to what it means to be courageous. But I think that's something that's really interesting, is courage can essentially be, you know, you can define it however you want. Courage is different for each person and each individual. And I even think that as you do your small building block C's, like what the small C is, can even evolve over time. So like, it was really difficult and, you know, at my own scale, courageous of me to go out running those first times when, you know, I wasn't confident, I wasn't experienced. Now, I wouldn't really call that small C courage too much, maybe really small C courage, but I run pretty much every day. So that has evolved over time for me. And so I think each of us can bring our own definition to the table and apply it to our own lives in a really sort of unique and personal way.
Sometimes we're put in a position where we have to be courageous, not by choice. It just happens. It falls on us. Like maybe some of those soldiers out there that were on the panel, they didn't wake up that morning thinking, I'm going to do something courageous today. They didn't sign up 2 weeks before and say, I'm going to do that. It's going to be courageous. They just woke up and said, I got to get courageous or I'm going to die. Or the guy next to me or the gal next to me is going to die. So they just find themselves in the middle of courage. But to self-select courage is a different type of process in a different different definition. I guess you could slice and dice it, courage, a few more ways into self-selected versus just catastrophic action. I don't know.
I mean, I would certainly hesitate as a civilian to try to cross that, you know, divide and speak from, you know, to the experience of anyone who's experienced that. But I do think, you know, I would hypothesize that that's kind of, you know, the idea of training is to train people to be courageous when the time comes, when the need is there to react in a certain way. And I know that, you know, my courage, we've talked about, you know, applied to running is, you know, being able to be ready to sort of put into action all of those small steps that I've accumulated over time in one big action. And I also think that can be applied. So as you mentioned, I work for a research center that focuses on climate change. And I also am involved in different initiatives around climate action. And, you know, you don't just suddenly wake up and they're amazingly courageous. At least I don't think most people do. Certainly some people, you know, have blinding moments of brilliance. But I think that most of us, you know, sort of work up with these small acts to be prepared when the time comes.
I think that's a brilliant definition. I was just thinking as you and Don were talking that if you have a little bag of courage and these little C's you're slowly depositing in that bag, and you may decide, I have a big race or the next big challenge up ahead, and I'm going to use this bag of little C's when I get there. And so you have a predefined reason or time to use them. But then there's also the time where you may be out on a little C courage training run and something catastrophic happens. And all of a sudden that bag has to be ripped open and you have to use all those little things that you've built up over time. I guess the important thing is that you're depositing little C's in that bag of courage all the time, because if you're not, you may not have enough resources when the time comes.
Yeah, I think that's a really fantastic metaphor.
Yeah, so let's talk about how to gather small C's. So what are some of the things you've done, Hillary, in your training to gather up some small C's? Maybe we can do some similar. So when the time comes, like Scott says, we reach into our bag, there's something there. Because right now, I think I have some Z's in mine. I think maybe a lot of sleeping on my gathering.
Well, I think that, you know, certainly over time, I have figured out, sometimes through trial and error, and sometimes really through depending on other people, to learn, you know, what are the best way to, like, you know, sort of use or deploy different C's. And for me, it definitely is a lot of small building blocks. And for training, I'm going to speak specifically to, you know, trying to build up to a big race, say. It is, you know, just getting in those training sessions, lots of small C's. I know that if I go out for one big run a week, that's not really good enough. But if I do a lot of small ones, that's going to be a lot better. It also, for me, definitely sort of took an act of courage. And this was, you know, several years ago for me, but to say, boy, you know, I'd really like to improve my trail running. I don't really know how to do it myself. And to say, I'm serious enough about this that I'm going to ask, you know, a trainer or a coach to help me. And it was literally an act of courage for me to be like, okay, like, I'm ready to say that I'm serious enough about it and take myself seriously and put myself out there. And that allowed me to find a coach who I've been working with for the last 4 years, Antonio Gallego. He's a French coach, but he's really helped me build up those C's as well and say, hey, you know, I think this one would be useful and this one would be useful, those little C's. He's also helped me with picking out the big ones that I want to build to. So I think that, you know, one of the things I would definitely recommend is not just depending on yourself, but also saying, you know, okay, it's an act of courage to ask for help when you need it.
Mm. We've done a whole episode on the word vulnerability. And I think that these play on a teeter-totter, where you need to have small C's to put yourself out there and become vulnerable, asking for help. We just talked to Gordon Harvey last week about his attempt at the Pinote 100 trail run. And he said one of the hardest things that he does in his life is to ask for help. And I think that you can develop small C's of courage by putting yourself out there and becoming vulnerable and asking for help.
Yeah, I think that you're absolutely right. Asking for help is a brave act in and of itself.
I think all the steps in you know, building up for a race and building for courage, little C's, might be, I'm just throwing this out here for discussion. This is not an opinion that can hold its weight at all. But let's talk about it. You know, bringing in nutrition aspect, working on your nutrition. These little things bring, I'm going to say another word that starts with C besides catastrophe, which I noticed was there, but confidence, you know, bringing in, filling your bag with C's of confidence to build the big C, courage. You need little pieces of confidence in Scott's metaphorical bag that he's carrying around on the trail.
I love this, these added C words, and I think that you're absolutely right. That confidence, I mean, I think that building those little C courages, right, over time, the whole goal is that you build to the big C and you become capable of being confident to go for that big C. And I love the idea of sort of having a little bag and that you're adding things to. And yeah, I think that all of those elements that make somebody a good runner, right, you know, you're right. It's, you know, it's not just training, or it's accepting that training is a much bigger thing. It's nutrition. It's actually how you're running. It's resting. And it's a lot of different elements that are all coming together.
Don just has a dictionary sitting by his computer right now, and he's just going through the C's and just throwing out words that start with C.
Did you know that carrots doesn't start with a K, Scott? I didn't know that. Hey, before we continue our conversation with Hillary, I always love this time of year because about now, Scott, you always remind us that we're in the Northern Hemisphere and changes in the climate naturally happen this time. And it's time to reach into our closet and pull out one of our favorite things, a jacket.
And you may not have good fall winter clothing. We're going to tell you, you can get it at johnji.com. They have a lot of really cool gear this year. Their fall winter release this year is based on the American Southwest. Really cool colors that remind you of that area of our country.
It just looks warm, Scott, on the outside, and it's warm on the inside.
And here's the deal. Because of Black Friday, they have a special deal going on. Through November 28th at noon Eastern time, you can get 20% off or more. So if you're looking for gifts, if you're looking for some new gear for yourself this fall and winter, go to johnji.com and check out their fall winter collection.
You can always go to the deals page and log right on over. That's what I do, Scott, because I can't remember all this mumbo jumbo that you're talking about. Now, back to Hilary Girardi and talk about courage.
Hilary, I'm fascinated by the wordplay or the language that you talked about earlier about, and I'm gonna try to murder this, bon courage. Is that even somewhat
that
close?
Great. That was excellent.
Okay. I'm curious, because you're using that phrase, good courage, to racers, whether you're beside them on the trail running or whether it's some spectators that are yelling this with a cowbell saying, bon courage. Is there a psychological play here? Are European, or in this case, French runners, do they have a psychological advantage where people are saying good courage instead of good luck? You know, dig deep. Basically, they're saying dig deep. You have it within you. Get that courage and go, versus the American, hey, maybe it'll be a good day. Maybe it won't, man. Just hope you have some luck.
I take offense to that. I'm going to stand up for the Americans. Go ahead. Go ahead, Hilary.
Oh, no. And Don, I wish you would stand up for the American runners, because I think that you probably know better than I do. What I would say is that perhaps, and this is, you know, only speaking to my own experience, but the biggest boost it ever gave me was like when I first learned the words, you know, and it was like the first exposure to it being like, wow, like bon courage, that is cool. And so maybe there isn't an advantage because they're, you know, pretty habituated to it already.
Tempered down and doesn't mean literally what we're talking about. Interesting.
They might not read into it as much.
Yeah, they're not thinking about language like we do. So, but maybe. Maybe it wasn't translated correctly. Is that a possibility? Maybe some guy is like, I've got 10 more minutes and I've got 12 more words. I'm just gonna throw this in there. It's luck. And he had to go.
Well, so in French, you can essentially use either bon courage or bonne chance. Chance being chance or luck, sort of as we take it. But I mean, you know, I don't know who wrote the dictionary translations, but in my experience, they're, you know, used relatively interchangeably. However, I you don't hear when you're actually out there in the effort, you don't so much hear people say bonne chance. That's something that you might have beforehand, but certainly during the race, people are saying allez, bon courage. And so I think that, you know, I don't know that it was just an artifact of linguistic laziness in translation.
Hilary, I think I want to learn to speak French, because that really sounds cool when you say these words.
Oh, well, thanks, Don.
Yeah, I think I need to expand my my vocabulary a bit and grab a few more languages, get them under my belt. I've got Californian down.
Add them to your bag.
Yeah. The bag of courage, Don.
If I may, I would actually add, just on sort of that linguistic level, that, you know, I was speaking to, you know, the fact that this theory that I've got, right, that the small C, big C courage can be applied all over the place. I do think it applies to language learning as well, that, you know, it takes a lot of work, you know, learning, you know, pushing yourself to do your lessons, and then, you know, for at first, the big C courage is like maybe going into a bakery and asking for a croissant, right? That's a big C courage, and it evolves over time. But it's all of those little C's that allow you to then build to the big C. And I've certainly felt that now at this point, I've, you know, spoken on stage and in French in front of thousands of people. And boy, it took a lot of little C courages in my bag to be able to build up to a big C courage of talking in French in front of people.
Let's talk a little bit about Scott's bag once again, but this bag that he has a hole in it. Is it possible to lose some of your little C's or your big C's that are there as athletes, as trail runners? Can we gain courage and then lose some and have to go gather some more? Is it something that you keep forever, or is it something you have to continuously deposit?
Ooh, that's a good question. I haven't thought about that, but I think that absolutely you can lose courage. And I think that's actually sort of that ebb and flow is an important part of the experience of being an athlete or being a human being, is that sometimes we have more courage than other times. And sometimes it can feel frustrating because you built up a lot of it and then you kind of lose it. I guess I would say on a very personal note, you know, I had, for example, an excellent, a really amazing trail running season in 2018. It was really this huge highlight year for me. And I was on cloud nine after that. And then over the course, I had, you know, a couple injuries over the course of 2019 and even 2020 with COVID. I had, I think, a hole in my bag where I, you know, started to say, boy, like, you know, was I a one hit wonder? You know, like, am I ever going to be able to compete again? At the level that I did before that I would like to. And so I think, you know, certainly in my experience, you can have a hole in the bag and lose some of that courage and then kind of have to hit the reset button and start building again small, to be able to, you know, to dare to set big objectives again. I wouldn't say, you know, that I went down to a totally empty bag. However, there was definitely some ebb and flow in the experience for me.
A little editorial here. She said 2018 was a good year for her. Let me define, since we're defining words, what good means to Hillary. Hillary was the second place finisher in the 2018 Sky Running World Series. She was the first place for the 2018 Sky Running Extra Series. And there's many, many good races that she had that year. Here is the, along that same line of having a hole in your bag of courage, is courage does not guarantee success. You can have these small C's that you gain and you're putting in your bag, and then you say, okay, here is the defined event that I'm going to go for, and I've deposited all the little C's, and I'm going to pull out the big C now. It doesn't guarantee success. So what does that do to your courage when you have a failure, Hillary?
So one of the, I think it's a, you bring up a really interesting point, Scott. And I think that actually I was recently introduced to a new sort of way to formulate the idea of success as well, by this really wonderful climber, Nina Williams, who talked about the importance of thinking about and defining success before you go for an objective. And so I think, you know, if you define success in a really narrow way, say that the only measure of success would be, say, winning a race, then your chances can be pretty slim, or, you know, you've got this very narrow definition. But if you try to think about success in a sort of a more broad way, in which, you know, perhaps part of success, you know, or one measure of success could be gaining a lot of experience, then actually I think that putting all those small C's in the bag in and of itself is a success. That said, it's absolutely true that even if you give yourself a pretty wide measure, multiple definitions of success for any given objective, sometimes you do completely fail and fall short. I think it's a pretty personal, it's dependent on the person, what it takes, how much, you know, how big the hole in their bag might be after that. Some people can kind of, you know, are thick skinned, they let it roll off their back and it's not a big problem. Other people who might be more sensitive have to work a lot harder to build it back up. But for me, you know, sort of any time, even if I do experience a success, you know, when I set a new objective, I'm not just riding on a wave of big C's. I'm always kind of like coming back to the building blocks. And I think that that's important to keep in mind, especially when we experience failure, which we all do. And I think it actually is probably the biggest learning experience for all of us, is to have some failures, have some holes in your bag of C's, because it's a big part of the human experience and it makes us humble.
You know, we talk about courage. And I think back to one of the sayings that I heard when I first started running is, you have to respect the trail. You have to respect the distance. You have to respect the challenge. And if you don't respect it, it's going to teach you a lesson and humble you a bit. And so I think having courage is one thing, and you have to be courageous to go out there and do it, but you also need to keep that respect for what's out there. So when you're looking for races and you're looking for a place to challenge yourself, do you look for something that intimidates you a bit, that kind of gives you some butterflies when you see it, not really knowing what might happen to you? It's like, I want to run that because it kind of intimidates me, and I need that to train hard, to keep on my diet, to keep on my sleep, to keep on the coach on me, all these things. I look for a race that I'm a little bit nervous about.
I think I find sort of like I try to find an equal balance between things that are far outside my comfort zone and, you know, demand a lot of work and scare me a little bit, and also things that, you know, I know that I like, but through experience. So for example, when I make my race calendar, I'll oftentimes do a little bit of mix of things that are kind of tried and tested, courses that I know that I love, mm-hmm. and then also things that, like, boy, you know, I have no idea what that's going to be like. My two big objectives for 2021 this year were actually one running objective and one ski objective, and they both pushed me far outside of the known for me. And I would say that definitely gives a bit of extra motivation for being able to stay on it, as you said. But I think that, you know, trying always, as you said, to respect the process and say, you know, okay, well, I'm building towards something bigger. That something bigger might scare me, or I might be pretty confident I can do it, but I still know, part of knowing you can do it is because I know if I put in the work, I can do it. I know I can't do it, you know, just off the couch, if it were, but I know I'm capable.
Another C word,
the couch.
So once you go out there and you accomplish that hard, scary thing, that adds to the bag of C's as well. I imagine you just, sometimes you have to go out there and reach and stretch a bit so you can add to your bag of C's.
Absolutely. And as I mentioned, I think that, you know, just as we define each of us individually what courage looks like for us, and I do want to emphasize that, you know, literally it can be different for different people. And sometimes at some, you know, junctures in our life, it can be courageous just to get out of bed in the morning, you know. It's a very personal thing and it's a temporal thing. It's not going to be the same, you know, throughout the year or even throughout the week and sometimes throughout the day. But I also think that what courage looks like for each of us evolves over time. And so sort of reaching for a big C that's, like, you know, way outside of our comfort zone and really scary for us, you know, doing that is effectively, then you get to put it in your bag and that evolves entirely sort of what courage might look like for you.
Hillary, do you think that we can carry that same, Scott's same bag of courage off the trail, off the mountain and into life? Do you think some of those same little C's that we have can work in other areas and aspects? Like, you know, go first day on the job, maybe going and do a presentation somewhere. Maybe can some of those same C's translate and spend in other places?
I certainly like to think that they do. There are some of the things about, you know, running that I certainly like to apply to other parts of my life. And, you know, those include accepting and dealing with uncertainty. Those include accepting discomfort. Mm-hmm. right? Like, one of the big things I think that we all like as runners actually is being uncomfortable. It's that type two fun. But knowing that, hey, this too shall pass, that's a huge part of it. So I definitely think that some of the things, you know, that we gain in small C's through running, including learning to ask for help, listening to your body, all of those can be applied in other places as well.
You mentioned type two fun. Can you explain to us type one fun, type two fun? I think that is a type three fun conversation. Let's do some of that.
Oh, wow. I mean, I feel like you guys must have talked about the different types of fun before on your show. But so for those who aren't familiar, type one fun is the fun that's fun when you do it and fun when you think about it afterward. Type two fun, which I think a lot of us recognize in different forms of running, is not that fun when you do it. And then it is fun when you think about it afterwards. So let's say you do a really hard run. And I mean, truth be told, it kind of sucked when you were doing it. It was really hard. But then afterwards, you were like, oh my God, that was so awesome. I'm totally going to do that again. That's type two fun, you know, to a peak. Afterward, there's some debate about the rest of the types of fun. Personally, I also identify type three fun as fun when you do it and not fun after. This kind of thing might be familiar to people who have any experience drinking or partying. Okay. And then type four fun does happen, which is you thought it was going to be fun and it wasn't fun when you did it and it wasn't fun after. And you said, boy, why didn't I think that would be fun?
Thank you for that.
Yeah, I've never heard that could be another episode, right, Don? the types of fun.
You brought that to this podcast for the first time. So we never talked about that. And it took courage.
I'm honored.
Hillary, you, as I look at your resume and look at your life story, it seems like you are full of courage. It takes courage to learn a new language. It takes courage for you to move to a different country and jump in with both legs. You know, that's extremely hard to do or extremely scary to do. I'm really impressed with your courage. What scares you? Where do you need to develop some little C's to get to the big C?
Mm, good question.
Man, you're putting me on the spot here. I mean, very recently I've had, you know, small C courages. As I mentioned, I've had to speak on stage a few different times, and that's big C's or little C's sort of for me at this point. But in terms of big C courage, I think for me, part of it has to do with, you know, I'm getting to an age, I'm 35, where I'm thinking about, okay, what am I doing with the rest of my life? And there are definitely, I know making decisions, not something I'm actually great at, believe it or not, but that's going to involve some big C courage to try to make decisions about, you know, sort of orientation of my life. And then, of course, certainly have, you know, mountain objectives and stuff like that. But I think right now, you know, some of the scariest stuff has to do with big life decisions.
I think that's where we all need a little help and a lot of big C's.
And I'm glad he asked you, Hillary, and not me, that question. That was a tough one. And I appreciate him putting you on the spot and not me.
I mean, I thought about, you know, just being like, okay, what scares me? Spiders.
Yeah, well.
You need to start smashing the little ones first, Hillary, and then you can get to the tarantula-sized spiders.
Oh, man.
We've really appreciated the discussion that we've had about courage, the little C's and the big C's, and putting it into perspective. I know that the next time I'm out on a run, I'm going to be whispering to myself, bon courage, just to give me a little bit of courage to maybe get out of my truck and get down the trail. We want to talk about an exciting project that you have just finished and you're promoting in Europe and will be available at some point down the road. And that is your 110K ski trip. Tell us a little bit about this project and when we can enjoy it.
For sure. Thanks so much for giving me the opportunity to talk about it. So back this year in April, my friend Valentine Fabre and I set a very big C goal for us, which was to attempt to be the first ever women's team to do the Haute Route or traverse from Chamonix to Zermatt on skis in one push. And over time, that had been sort of, there'd been a record that was set and reset. beaten reset over the years by men, including Valentin's husband, who actually passed away in a mountain accident a few years after he set the record back in 2010. But we set out to sort of do that as the first ever women's team. And it really, it leaves from the church in Chamonix, same place as the UTMB leaves from. So a lot of your listeners would be familiar with that. And then it goes sort of the shortest route possible over the mountains, about, as you said, a little under 110K, 8,100 meters of vertical gain about, and finishes at the church in Zermatt. And we did that. We were aiming for 24 hours. We had some opportunities to have some ultra belly, or, you know, sort of getting sick, not being able to fuel. Ended up finishing in 26 hours. But it was a really cool project. And we made a film about it called The Traverse, which was produced by Ben Tibbetts and Jake Holland, good friends of ours. And it's doing festivals here in Europe right now. It was at Banff earlier, and hopefully it'll be available soon in the U.S. as well.
Well, make sure you let us know when that happens. I just had an epiphany as you're talking about this. Sometimes we can take advantage of others' experiences to put little C's in our pocket. So maybe watching the Traverse when it comes out can actually put little C's into our own personal courage bag.
Yeah, actually, I'm really glad that you said that, because I'm at a loss for names just at the moment. But there was this wonderful talk that I heard by a guy who is an artist and an activist, who talked about the fact that courage, while fear is contagious, courage is also contagious. And so one of the great things that we can do is share our own experiences of courage and take courageous acts and share that with other people. I think we all know that from running, when, you know, it's a lot easier to get out of bed in the morning and go for a run if you've got a friend doing it with you, right? We can sort of build on each other's courage through sharing it.
Hillary, you're absolutely right. Because in my bag, I have a lot of half a C's, and I need to find someone to bind my C. And Scott, you've done that a lot when we get up in the morning to run. We bring two half C's. We have one courage, and we get out there and get it done.
We have one full little C.
Oh, I think we've got a whole new talk now. Yeah.
Hillary, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate your banter, your enthusiasm, and the courage that you bring that can help us fill our little bag of C's. So we really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. It's always a pleasure. And I look forward to talking to you guys about something else another time.
So go out and bon courage.
Mas.
Yeah, very good, Scott. This sounds very Frenchy. French and Spanish. How do you like that?
Scott, you and I did something here last week that's a lot different than we usually do.
We were invited on someone else's podcast, the Adventure Jogger podcast, based out on the East Coast of the United States. They reached out to Don and I and said, hey, we want to interview you. And we said, are you sure you're talking to the right two people? And they said, yes. So we joined them on a fun, interesting conversation with Ryan and Jeff.
They asked some interesting questions. We revealed some things that we probably wish we hadn't, but they had control of the recording, so there's nothing we could do about it.
So if you're looking for some extra miles, you're looking for a podcast to join you on these extra miles this holiday weekend, head on over to The Adventure Jogger, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, and check us out. And they have some other guests, too, that are probably more interesting than us.
Well, we're sure of that.
It takes a team of people to finish a race. It takes a team of people to put together a podcast. And we want to thank some of those people.
Our Patreon supporters, we appreciate their participation.
We want to thank especially our business Patreon supporter, Doug Crumley at Crumley & Associates. You can find him at DougCrumleyJr.com. When you have the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant.
We'd like to thank our producer, Doug Mayer, and our associate producer, Ryan Warr.
And especially our social media expert, Yana Gibalova, who just joined us and is doing a wonderful job.